said.
In the wake of nuclear Armageddon, only the cockroaches would survive. In 2002, a company was formed by a man named Jareth Jarrett. This company would go on to outlast WCW, the XFL, the WBF, Pluto as a planet, and MySpace. While the quality and networks may vary, they were invulnerable. North South Connection Podcast Network presents TNA Never Dies. Now, cross the line with your hosts, Aaron, Jenny, and JT.
No So Podcast Connection Network. Welcome back. TNA Never Dies. Guys, in this episode, is Ed Ferrara more fuckable or less fuckable?
More fuckable.
More?
Mm-hmm.
JT, what do you think? More or less?
Completely unfuckable.
Nah, that's not true. What is... So we're back at TNA Never Dies. We're delving into the second episode, which aired June 26th, 2002. What's your excitement level going into episode two?
High.
High, right?
Very high, yes.
Yeah.
I really dug episode one of the podcast and of TNA.
Nice.
And I was excited to see how they come out. Now, we haven't confirmed. We should probably look into it, but I'm fairly confident this was taped. I think they were doing two at a time. So we'll see how that plays into the quality of the programming and the atmosphere. But I'm going to try and confirm as we go. But I think they were doing two at a time.
Yeah, I buy that. The crowd looks the same.
Same, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, how often could they bring those NASCAR guys and Toby Keith back?
Exactly.
Y'all want me to come back where? Be a lot of that. What are the storylines, Jenny, you're most excited to, like, delve into again going into this episode?
Obviously, the lingerie battle royal, top of the list, and also Scott Hall, Jeff Jarrett. Mm-hmm. And midgets versus gravity.
Oof! Midgets never win.
I know.
They don't win against gravity.
Fun to watch them try, though.
Nah, they don't win in life expectancy. They just don't win. Let me ask you, JT. Now, we're coming off King of the Ring 2002 here, which aired on the Sunday, and this is on the Wednesday. The Raw on Monday, there was nothing really much going on, but we got the setup for the ladder match between Jeff Hardy and The Undertaker the next week.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At this point... Are we looking? Is the product in WWF interesting enough that you need this alternative, or are you tuned into WWF here? And is what they're doing interesting enough to be like, I don't even need to see anything else at this point?
Before I get to that, I will confirm episode two was taped the same night as one, but that is the last time they taped for the rest of the year. So we are live every week from here on out.
Okay.
All right. I think. It was cool to have an alternative because for me as a wrestling fan, especially in that time, we didn't have easy access to anything you wanted. It was cool to have more wrestling. Like, that was always cool. Did I need it? I don't know. I mean, probably not. Like, I think Duty was interesting enough. They had some different stuff going on during the stretch. And it was really we'll see it play out on the Ruthless Aggressive podcast. They were really throwing everything at the wall in 02. Like, it felt like one of those years where they were just trying to see what sticks. They changed course like by the week, by the month. Things changed quickly. They get the brand split. Now they get the GM. Like Flair's the owner. That ends like 2 months in. Then they go to the GMs. Like, so they're all over the place. Then they have the title bouncing back and forth. Then they do the split title. The guys are coming up from OVW, switching shows, switching gimmicks, Reverend Devon. You know, like, all this stuff keeps changing. So it's a big year of change. And I think it is a cool era. And I'm glad TNA existed. And I'm cool. It's cool to check it out to see either how different or similar it was as a product. And King of the Ring is a very shaky show, Aaron, as you'll hear us discuss in our No Holds Barred June rankings. The King of the Ring 02 is an interesting show, but it also has that awful main event of Triple H versus The Undertaker, which was not good.
That's weird, Triple H in a bad main event.
Hmm.
His record's usually so stellar. Was there anything on last week's show that you would put as more interesting or better than Hulk Hogan and Kurt Angle from King of the Ring?
Probably the X Division match.
Oh, yeah, maybe against the Flying Elvises.
Mm. Mm.
Jenny, are you familiar with the 2002 King of the Ring?
I'm not.
You don't really need to be.
Shocking.
You don't need to be.
Good.
Brock Lesnar.
That's
wins.
What I like to hear.
Hulk Hogan gets beat up by Kurt Angle.
Okay.
So, I'll also throw this out there. This show is still in Huntsville, as we said, it's taped. Then they do a couple in the Municipal Auditorium in Nashville, which is, I think, a fairly well-known arena. And then from episode 5 on, they're at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds, which is where they pretty much set up camp as their home base, and that'll be known as the Asylum. That's so we'll get asylum. There eventually. Right. So we're not in the Asylum yet. We'll get there. So this is our last episode in Huntsville, and I think that's it for a while from there. Right.
So June 26, 2002, Huntsville, Alabama. Show opens. First thing we see is, of course, Jeff Jarrett. Jackie Fargo.
<Why not? laughs>
Clearly the number one feud in the promotion going forward. And the gang is all here. Tanae's in a tux. West is in a different Hawaiian shirt. And Ed Ferrara is in a Chris Jericho-style shirt to start this one off. So I would say he is way less attractive than Chris Jericho. What are our thoughts on this?
No.
Would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
West is so fired up for this cat fight.
Oh, yeah. West is fired up for everything, but yes. It's like he's never seen naked women before.
I mean, he may not have.
In fact, there is no way that man hasn't visited a strip club.
That's true.
Dressed
exactly. I bet the Home Shopping Network, too. They probably were banging overnight on those late-night tapings.
Of course.
For sure. Orgies nonstop over there.
They for sure shared the studio with the fucking dating line people. Well, you know, they move them out, move them in, you know? Jarrett comes out first, and, you know, Hall can't even come out, and Jarrett's like, I'm not waiting any longer. We're starting this match right here. We're doing this match now. Jenny, Hall comes out, and Toby Keith is with him. How would you describe Toby Keith's body language here?
Reluctant comes to mind. Like, where's my check? Let me just do this shit and get out of here.
Yeah. Does he know?
I would say horny. He looked horny to me.
Who is he lusting after?
How did he look horny to you?
Ed Ferrara, ringside. You guys are talking about how fuckable he is.
You got lust in your eyes for Ed Ferrara. You want to fuck Mike Tenay? Yeah. I see it in your eyes. I see it in your eyes, Don West. You want to fuck Ed Ferrara.
No, it's kind of like he just realizes that he's out of his element. Like, I'm in over my head. Like, these people are insane. Wrestling is insane. What have I done, basically?
His arms are like jammed into his armpits, like. But he's making fists with his hands, like it's the fist arm cross, which doesn't work for anyone. And I just did it in front of my desk. No one can see it, but I'm giving you a visual image of me. I'm also naked doing this, just so we're clear. And I have a massive erection. All right, let's move. It's hard because my penis is very small. All right, where are we here? So they're not waiting any longer. Scott Hall comes out. Scott Hall's music here, is it the worst music Scott Hall ever has?
Yes.
Oh, this kicks off the great, what becomes a running theme here going forward, is the knockoff music that
right.
we get.
Yes.
So he's got this knockoff NWO theme. So it's like, and these themes all get burned in my head. I start to get an affinity for them because I hear them so often now.
And then suddenly you start to push like entire pay-per-views based on a theme song that where the show is shit.
Well, that was a real good one.
Mm-hmm.
That was an actual good one. But this happened to me with ECW. I've been broken down by like the knockoff like dub themes in ECW where I like them even more than the real ones now. Like that's where I'm at with like Tommy Dreamer and these guys. Mikey Whipwreck's fake Beck song.
Like you're done with Enter Sandman and you're happy with Come In Sandman?
Yes, I like the knockoff. So I like this knockoff. But we get a lot of these like weird ass riff songs. And some of them even have like this even has like, isn't this one of those that has like words in it, which is weird?
Is Toby Keith singing on this track
but,
for him?
Yeah, like, who made this music? It's so weird. Like, who made this music? But Tanay calls him wrestling's real outlaw. So Scott Hall, the outlaw.
Is that a shot at the New Age Outlaws?
No, I think it's the fact that everyone's fired him, and here he is.
Isn't there another outlaw on the show called James Storm?
No, he's Cowboy, sir. Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Ron Bass is the old outlaw. But what a dig at Ron Bass. What's Tanae's problem with Ron Bass?
Sure.
So it's Jeff Jarrett versus Scott Hall to start. Scott Hall starts with the toothpick, but he does did he always do that fake laugh after he threw the toothpick?
Not always, but, you know, he'd do, like, the weird, like, scared fingers and the laugh sometimes in there.
Ah, I found the scared fingers work, but this laugh, like, is he real? Like, what's happening here?
It's he's drunk, like you said last episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, 30 beers.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Ed Ferrara declares that these are the two top talents in the world today. So, they said two of the top talents, excuse me. How big would the field have to be for these two to be in the top talents of the world?
Yeah.
50? 100? 1,000? What are we dealing with?
I don't know if they're making the PWI 500.
At this point. And they start the match, and this is where I think Jarrett really starts with he wrestles like a guy the same size as Scott Hall, the way he does offense. It's all punches and power stuff, but his body doesn't kind of fit that style at all. And it occurred to me midway through this match that these guys feuded 7 years earlier, and 7 years earlier it felt way more important. And they almost seem like completely different people than they were back there. Now, JT, have Jarrett and Razor changed, or has the world simply changed around them?
I think all of it.
All of it.
Jarrett hasn't really changed, honestly. It felt like they were working through the comp tape from 95. Like, it was pretty in line with their 95 stuff. Like, if you watch WrestleMania 11 and then this, like, the match is probably similar. But right. It's funny because I was thinking the same thing in 95. But then I remembered, like, they also crossed paths later with, like, the NWO shit in, like, 97 and, like, 90. Like, so this isn't the only time they get into it. So it's kind of an on and off again little rivalry. But 95 is their most heated stuff anyway. And then weren't they also part of that, like, Super Bowl where it's, like, him, Jarrett, and Sid? And they've crossed paths a bunch, I guess. They've always been around each other.
Yeah.
But this very much felt like – I think because now Hall's the face again and Jarrett's the heel, that's why it really reeks of, like, 95 matches that they had.
Regardless of the quality, Jenny, would you like to see Jarrett and Razor feud for another 7 years?
No, thank you. Huh? I'm good with it. Like I said last time, Jarrett is like Shane Douglas to me, and this basically looked like a Shane Douglas match. So,
who do you prefer, Shane Douglas or Jeff Jarrett so far?
See, that's a horrible question.
That's what I do. I'm a horrible
I have watched a shitload more of ECW than I've watched of this. So I'm just going to give that to Shane just based on frequency and knowledge.
How much money would you pay to watch them have passionate sex?
Well, I enjoy I would probably pay $100 to watch that.
Live?
Yeah.
It's not. Does it bother you? There's not really a market for, like, live pornography?
Yeah, that's bothered me for a real long time.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the quarantine time, I think that you could probably make a lot of money that way. A lot of people probably need to support their families. So.
Yeah, they come to your house, they have sex in your house.
Yeah. I mean, social distance, you know, watching.
Yeah.
You can do that. You can definitely pull that off.
See, that bothers me, and the fact that ice cream places don't sell slices of ice cream cake also bothers me.
Every sport should sell pieces of ice cream cake. So
I agree. So the match trucks on. K-Crush interferes. If R-Truth were the 24/7 champion in 2002, who would be the guy sprinting to the ring to take his title?
Brian Christopher.
Is that it?
I would say Jackie Fargo.
Jackie Fargo is a perfect 24/7 champion, which is weird because R-Truth then has to sell for Jackie Fargo.
Brian, he would do beautifully, I do believe.
Oh yes, he's very good. He's very good. Mm-hmm. Brian Christopher comes out, and you know, it's just kind of a big clusterfuck here. Jarrett, I know the song by Toby Keith is "How Do You Like Me Now," but Jarrett keeps saying it to the audience at this point. He keeps yelling, "How do you like me now?" Which I really hope doesn't become like another slap nuts thing for him. Don't need him yelling that. Toby Keith comes in, hits a low blow on Jarrett. Which,
right in front of the ref. Right in front of the ref.
Yeah.
Which Mike Tenay calls the great equalizer. Like, how tipped to the scales where that's equalizing things? And then the ref counts three with Toby Keith still standing in the ring right beside everything.
Why did I give this 2.5 stars? I really don't recall right now because...
I liked it better.
Really?
Yeah.
I went 2.75. It was a template Razor Ramon, Jeff Jarrett match. And that was usually their standard grade for me. And they kind of blended in the fuckfest at the end, which was fine. I mean, Jarrett. And I thought Hall looked really good. Like, he was lively. He's moving around, hitting crisp strikes. I don't know. This is a fine opener. It's like, if you're going to have these promotions where you're going to dip into the well and kind of have these veterans on the top going at it, working their standard matches, like, this was pretty cromulent at that level versus guys that couldn't go anymore. Like, these guys could at least deliver their baseline match, and that's pretty much what they do here.
Yeah, I'm at 2.75 too, but also in this recap, I'm not going over anything that was good. There was good stuff in the match too. I'm just kind of highlighting the nonsense. For both of you, what was a greater travesty of justice? The low blow in front of the ref and the three count with Keith in the ring, or Vince McMahon living a life full of joy?
The Toby Keith. Because, I mean, the ref was looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really, like, I guess Vince has kind of done things behind the scenes, you know? No one's really caught him doing anything.
Come here, Rita Chatterton!
So then we jump back. We got some cage dancing like we had last week. And then, like, the announcers do this thing where, like, this was the match that was supposed to be the opener.
Right.
So Jeff Jarrett, that wasn't the opener. He was just declaring it to be for what, mm-hmm. I don't know, reasons. And we get a woman named Brown Eyed Girl leading a man named Cheeks to the ring.
Cheeks.
What a big motherfucker.
Yeah. With an X.
Well,
so I have a fun fact about Cheeks.
Ooh.
The first show on June 19th, when they started to film, they had a dark match to get things going. And Cheeks worked that dark match.
Did he have a heart attack?
No. Nah, but he hit the rope so hard that it broke.
Might as well.
The estimated repair time was 30 to 60 minutes.
Wow.
Which they did not have because they had to go live on pay-per-view in a few minutes. So they shuffled the schedule, and that is why last week we talked about how they opened the show with the Legends and all that stuff.
Oh.
That they ended up doing that first so they could have the ring crew and some of the wrestlers go out there and fix the ring.
Oh, shit.
Imagine if they couldn't fix it and they couldn't do the pay-per-view because a fucking diabetes Cheeks hit the ropes, destroyed the ring with his fucking just his mass.
How embarrassing is that? I mean,
he is a fucking big dude.
I mean, fucking.
When he comes to the ring, okay, Mike Tenay is like, Cheeks is gonna work a body part because he was trained by the Andersons. Like, what?
He's gonna work his fucking thighs.
That's it. Like, what body part would? If you had to guess, would you have guessed Cheeks was trained by the Andersons? Like, it's gotta be Yokozuna that trained him, right? Yokozuna
only would say, "Get the fuck out of my face." Only stop training this guy.
Poor Frank Parker. Just not set up for a world of fun here tonight.
Oh, yeah, Frank Parker. Now, is Cheeks, like, if you were a cannibal, would Cheeks be the guy you looked at and, like, his thighs became, like, chicken thighs? Like,
right?
If it was a cartoon? Like, those are the biggest legs I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
Jenny, describe his legs.
It's like, I don't even know if I have words. It's like, they're very massive, of course, and then they're very proportionate to the rest of his body. Like, he's very large, but his feet are small, and so it does this very weird pear shape thing, and then it just jiggles a lot, and then his underwear goes up his ass all the time.
It's like if you had a bunch of Play-Doh and just jammed it into a random shape.
Right.
That's good.
And then scaled it up.
Yeah, with the tights up the ass, he reminds me of, like, a fat Ahmed Johnson.
Ferrara is, like, all over him with fat jokes. He says he's chasing Tio around trying to eat him and, like, all this other stuff.
Yeah, I kept looking at his legs and thinking of cottage cheese.
Yeah.
And I don't like cottage cheese.
No.
Me either.
It just made me – I don't want to say it made me sick. That's mean. But fuck, he was big. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, so gigantic. And he murders Frank Parker with all the Rikishi stuff. Now, do we count that as a WWF reference? He's doing all the Rikishi. And not only
Alicia comes down during this, by the way, and she has a very intense conversation with Borash.
Yeah, which is again where I guess we're following up on that business with the referee last week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ferrara's talking about not only doing the fat jokes, he's getting really deep with like a lack of oxygen. Talking about like, he's breathing up all the air in the building, basically. And now Frank Parker tries a sunset flip on Cheeks, and like I don't think Frank Parker has ever seen a wrestling match before. Like, and then Cheeks just fucking jumps on him, right? But then gives him the most unnecessary splash ever for the pinfall.
Why the fuck not?
Well, because he already, like, it's got to be a lot of effort for Cheeks to get up. Like, you've already jumped on the man's chest. Like, you don't need to roll off and do a splash. And then he gets the pin, and Borash gives Alicia the money, and we're out. Guys, how much are you looking forward to seeing Cheeks coming up?
I guess I'm just curious to see if he survives, because the match is a debacle. And if he just squashes guys, he's probably okay. But if they actually give him like any kind of feud, we're probably in trouble.
If he was fighting Triple H in 2003, they'd make him do a 25-minute match against him. What do you mean you're out of shape? Get in there.
What do you think, Aaron? Where are you at on this Cheeks guy?
Oh, I don't want to see him ever again.
Are you serious?
He can barely move. He can barely
move. He's probably not going to be out there, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to go to the disappearance. I don't know. Like, he can barely move. The thing with the girl is weird. I don't know. Like, we're going to talk about how this show progresses and what I think, what I would hope TNA would be, and this is not it. Like, this, to me, is – I don't want to shame him or anything. That's not what I'm trying to do. But this feels almost like freak show level largeness.
Yeah, I think that's why I like it.
Fair enough. Like, I think it's too because, like, they could have dressed him in anything else.
Besides the giant trash bag that he was wearing?
Yeah.
The two-piece trash bag.
Could have dressed like Huel from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Viscera. I'm sure this would Viscera – although Viscera has – I imagine Viscera has, like, super skinny legs.
He does. He's the opposite. Because when he's, like, Big Daddy V, he's got, like, the kind of thin lower legs, and then, like, he's just got the big tits, the upper body.
Yeah, it's like you can't believe his legs are not crumbling under his weight.
They talk up a lot, too, about next week already here. They get a tag match now set as Jarrett and K-Crush will take on Scott Hall and Brian Christopher. So that's already made for next week. So we're already starting the hype again.
They're building, yeah. And right away, too, we roll into the recaps from last week. So we're asking last week or last podcast about how they're going to integrate recaps. And I think they give a pretty substantive recap of the K-Crush, Brian Christopher stuff here to kind of dance into it. There's something that's important. And K-Crush comes out for the match. But he's dancing, which doesn't seem to really fit this K-Crush character at all. Jenny, what do you think is more strange? K-Crush spitting out, like, his truth while dancing? Or if current-day R-Truth were, like, screaming about racial injustice? What would be stranger?
Definitely the latter. Because he's pretty established as a pretty, you know, fun guy. Not, you know, one to bring up such things. Because he's real dumb, you know, apparently.
Wow.
He's not supposed to know about any of that.
Of course, you would say that. JT, what? Do you think the dancing is just like, is it something we're going to see less of going forward as he kind of sheds the Crush character into the Ron Killings, the Truth character? And it's just like a remnants or?
No, I think he'll still work it in here and there.
Like, I don't mind it in the matches. It's more like in the entrance that seems strange.
Nah, I feel like he's still going to do it. Brian Christopher's is worse, though. He's, really going over the top with his shit.
Well, he does that weird dance where he puts his arm out and then goes sideways and puts his head up and down.
It's so stupid. It just feels so dumb here. Like, no one wants to see it. It's depressing, honestly, when he comes out doing it.
Well, because it's like him and Scotty Too Hotty were, like, a joke, right?
Right.
Like, the whole thing was that they were silly and
stupid. It was supposed to be that they were goofballs. And now it's like he's not. He's, like, trying to be a top-level guy, and he's still doing this goofy shit.
Do you think it's a case of him just trying to hang on to anything that got him pops with the audience?
Yeah. Yep. He thinks that's what got him over. And it was Rikishi. Not
the
damn.
They should have put him with – would Cheeks have worked in this role next to Brian Christopher?
Maybe.
Okay, so Cheeks is Rikishi, Brian Christopher's Grandmaster Sexay. Who, Jenny, who is Scotty Too Hotty from TNA?
Conan.
Toby Keith. Toby.
I can see Toby Keith doing the worm. So now we're into the match. We got K-Crush against Brian Christopher. West and Ferrara spend the – number one, they're talking about Jeff Jarrett nonstop, so he's officially the Triple H. And they spend a lot of this match arguing about whether Hermie Sandler is a twerp or not, which, I mean, his name is Hermie. Is Hermie short for Herman?
I guess.
Yeah, gotta be.
But what grown man allows Hermie to be the name? Like, I get it if you're 12, but Hermie seems, I don't know, it seems like a child's awful name.
It is. It's not even a child's name. I think children would be embarrassed to be called Hermie.
Yeah.
Herman. Herman Marion Sadler III.
It's too many names. That's the third person named that?
Mm-hmm.
Would the family hate their children? Herman Marion Sadler. Herman's not a good name. Marion's a woman's name. Hermie the hermaphrodite is for sure what he was called in school. So the match is nothing. The NASCAR guys crotch truth, and Christopher spends a fucking eternity on the top rope putting the goggles on so he can hit this hip-hop drop.
Mm-hmm.
I went 2.5. How do you feel about the hip-hop drop as a finisher, Jenny?
It was ridiculous. I love how you're like, I hate this match. I gave it 2.5 stars.
But because 2.5, because look, for me, 0 is all-time bad.
Okay.
So 0 is where you get, like, it's like the Punjabi prison match. It's Vince fighting Stephanie. It's Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler at WrestleMania 27. And to me, this is way closer to a good match than it is that. That's why I can't put it at like 0.5 or whatever, you know? Like.
All right. Fair enough. I think Justin mentioned last time about sweetening. Like, I thought that the crowd sound and the visual did not match at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it sounded like everybody was real hype, and then you're looking around and most everybody's sitting down. So I started to grow suspicious during this match.
I did too. I thought there was some sweetening going on in the show. I mean, it could just be that the crowd, not directly in the hard camera, was hyped up because it's a consistent sound. But yeah, it did feel a little bit like maybe they were piping in on this. We'll see, though, as we go back live. Because I think it's a lot harder to do live. So we'll see if the crowd continues to be hot or not. Because, again, the last 2 weeks, like the first one, they were really into it. So,
right.
Were they really into Christopher, though, the first time?
Yeah, when he came out first. Yeah. They were like everyone who first arrived, pretty much.
Yeah.
Mm. You know what else, too? And it might not necessarily be fair, but if they tape this, it like obviously the reactions are going to be smaller. Because these guys are seeing them for the second, third, fourth time.
And you're tired, you know, you're like 3 hours right into the tape, whatever.
Right.
That makes sense.
I thought this was fine. They kept it strike-based, mat-based. The jingling on K-Crush's tights got distracting to me, the belt. It's like this constant, like he's got keys hanging all over him. Some back work. The crowd was into the comeback for Christopher if it was not sweetened. You get Hermie and Sterling, like you say, getting involved. And it was, I don't know, you get the NASCAR payoff. I was surprised K-Crush loses, but I think we'll find out fairly quickly he's a little bit bulletproof in this promotion.
Yeah,
it seems like he's the guy like Jericho and the WWE where he could just take losses and it didn't really matter. But
it wasn't clean too,
correct? Right. Yeah, he's protected right a bit, but it was fine. Nothing to make you hot, but it won't make you limp either. This match just existed, so I went 2.5. Christopher, like, he feels like he's a good talent to focus on. He's another one of those guys you heard about for years, like, when will he break out. Then he finally kind of got his run, and now he feels like he's washed, like, really quickly. So it'll be interesting to see, like, if he can regain any momentum here or if he is done.
Well, he's another one of those smaller guys that doesn't do anything smaller guys do.
Well, then that was a big problem with the original WWF light heavyweight division that they built around. But, and they had these other guys flying around, and then he's just, like, working fucking chin locks and shit.
See, I don't actually think it's horrible when he's surrounded by guys like Takamichi Noku, because then he's different. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like Dean Malenko in the WCW. Not nearly as good, but, like, it's kind of the same idea, right? But when he's in there with like regular guys, to me, that's when it feels off. Because there's what makes a smaller guy special in general is generally speed or the maneuvers he does. But if he's not doing those, then he's just a guy doing that stupid fucking arm dance. Sorry, it bothers me. I'm allowed to be bothered. I don't see how you can cheer him after seeing that dance. Like, he might pop when he comes out, then he does that dance, and like, ooh, I think I'm cheering for the black guy, even though I'm in Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember your crowd here.
Yeah. So next we got Borash sauntering out for the Lingerie Battle Royal. And he's announcing all of them. And the announcers are like, they're shit. The commentators are shitting on Borash for not announcing properly. But he actually is announcing properly. It's the camera that's not picking them up as they're coming out from the two entrances. It's like he'll announce.
Nonsense.
Yeah, it just feels like a mess. Like,
yes.
I don't know why they're coming down on him. They're in the wrong. So the participants in this Lingerie Battle Royal, like we mentioned last time, are Elektra, Aaron, Francine, Joni, Alexis Lurie, Sasha, Taylor Vaughn, Shannon, and Tyler. I think it's interesting that only two of them have last names. Off the top of your head, JT, how many women in 2002 WWF had last names?
Trish Stratus.
Yeah.
And that's probably it. Stephanie McMahon.
I guess, yeah. You're missing a couple.
Molly Holly.
Two more.
Stacey Keibler.
Yeah, and?
Tori Wilson.
There you go. Jenny, were the WWF ahead on women's rights in 2002?
Probably so, because they had some last names.
They did have last names.
I think
names.
Just based on Molly Holly and Jazz alone, they were ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I mean, they would go on to portray Lita as a whore.
Mm, but she was one.
That was a shoot, brother.
That was a shoot, brother. So all the women, interesting decision to make them all start in pajamas instead of like evening gowns or clothing or whatever.
I like the pajamas. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I got.
Well, that's probably the most likely time you're going to have like lingerie underneath, right? Some sexy silk pajamas.
Yeah, definitely putting on some frumpy old beat up pajamas on top of that.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Feel like that's one. Happy. One gets worn without the other.
Yeah.
Right. Like, do you wear a bra under pajamas?
No, especially not fancy bras.
Sorry, I wasn't. That question was not for you, Jenny.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
If I buy it, I'm gonna wear it.
I love how Alexis Lurie starts this match with wrestling moves.
She's trying.
She's trying to do arm locks, but it's the only wrestling moves that we see in the whole thing. Tyler is immediately disrobed by Elektra. She's basically naked. Sasha's out next. Aaron's out next.
Did you catch what Ferrara said? Sasha is out and I am up when she went out.
That's a good line by Ferrara. It's all right. But one of the things I noticed is there's no balance on the commentary here. Like,
right.
With JR and Jim Ross, JR and Jim Ross and King, the King would lose his mind, but Ross would kind of keep it under control.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the three of them are just fucking. It's like they've never seen women before.
Right, they're all getting super horny.
Yeah. Francine goes out early, and clearly there was something. She's wearing like a bikini that's way too small.
Like she popped her implant or something. The way she's like holding her chest.
Yeah.
See, I thought she was just trying to cover up.
Maybe it was awkward the way she was doing it. But then she's crying, and the announcers talk how she really needed this job. So I didn't realize like this was a guarantee for a job.
Yeah.
Like, they make it like she's done here. And then we get an iconic moment.
Well, Ferrara
loosely quotes.
Yeah, Ferrara goes out to comfort her, and he looks like a shorter Mickey Rourke, I find, this week, like from Iron Man 2.
Well, I thought he looked like the more I kept looking at him, he looks like Randy the Ram. That's what I was thinking too, like Mickey Rourke. Like that's exactly what he looks like. It's like Randy the Ram and the Wrestler. That's what the vibe I kept getting out of him.
Yeah, and he goes to help her up, and he's basically just feeling her up, right? And
straight grabbing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she goes down on her knees in front of him, and he behaves as though he's gonna get blown in front of the crowd. Like he looks.
And
up
he like puts his arms out and his head back, like he's like a cult leader or something. It's really weird.
Yeah.
She pulls his belt off.
Yeah. What a
and
live
beats his ass with it.
Beat like just whips the shit out of him. Right? Like, would a live blowjob had have improved this show or made it worse?
Blowjobs always improve everything. So even if it's on Ed.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think Francine seems like she's probably done this before anyway.
Adept blowjobs. It's just a strange thing. Like, why would he put his arms out in the air? What does he think is happening here?
It was like he's like, you know, calling for the crowd to cheer him on. I don't know. He's like acting like he's like Jesus or something. Mary Magdalene.
He was just really excited about the blowjob. Yeah. Give him a break.
Yeah, he definitely grabbed her tit when he was helping her up, and that's like she kind of catches him, and then she does the tease into the blowjob.
That's
but anyway. Then he gets whipped with a belt.
Two announcers in 2 weeks that have felt her up on television.
Yes. Like, do you think it was her idea, or did they have to ask her? Like, hey, do you mind if we all grab your tits?
Oh,
you know.
I bet they didn't ask her at all. I bet. It's all just like, well, this is what we're doing.
It's just assumed.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy writing the show, right?
Yeah. You want this job, you'll do what we want.
You'll cry in the audience and degrade yourself. And then... So Miss Joni finishes... It keeps going, but Miss Joni finally tears off Elektra's clothes for the win. Francine's fixing her bra. Francine stands tall. I say, what the fuck is going on? And now they say it's Taylor Vaughn that's won it. What did I miss here?
It's chaos. The whole thing is chaos. It is completely peters out with the double cross at the end. And then Francine just beats the shit out of her. It was I don't know, definitely a TNA time waster. T&A, not TNA. And a little long, but I mean, it just is what it is in 2002, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't really give it a grade. I thought it was fine. It had its highlights, but it really, really dragged at the end.
Yeah, I had trouble grading it also. I have a big NR. Jenny, what do you have it as?
This is a 5-star lingerie battle royal because, I mean, what the fuck else are you expecting to happen during this event?
Well, a blowjob. I mean, a blowjob would have been nice.
Well, you're right, but a beating with a belt is a close second, and... Lots of hot chicks in their underwear, varying degrees of sexiness. Like, one of them has, like, real granny panty situation going on. It's really hard for me to tell a lot of these women apart, so I cannot tell you their names. But most of them did look really hot. So, you know, all of that works. And I enjoyed this quite a bit. And I can't believe both of you. I'm looking at the sheet and like, no rating. What? I'm the only bitch going to rate. I mean, yeah. Come on.
It was nonsensical. What? Also, what? Taylor Vaughn's hair is awful, by the way.
Would this have been improved by Mildred Burke coming in and taking her top off?
Or just stretching everyone.
Is she just the female Stu Hart?
Yep.
Oh, no.
So there
was there a particular look of any of these ladies that you guys enjoyed as far as lingerie preferences?
I'm trying to remember. Francine. I think Alexis looked the best. Yeah, well, yeah, Francine looks slutty, but Taylor Vaughn's hair I could not get past, no matter what she had on or was doing. Her hair.
What's your deal with her hair?
She had like that weird short bob. I don't know, just made her look older than she was.
I liked her lingerie the best. I think it was like powder blue number. I think she was wearing the garters, too.
Yeah, she was. I was just so attracted to Francine. Like, I remember watching ECW for the first time in 99 and seeing Francine. And, I mean, look, Sable and Sunny were hot, but Francine basically played a whore on television. And, like, that 1999 me was really into Francine. So I think that's kind of lasted. I'll forever love her.
What about...
I'll make her happy.
All the chicks being barefoot, does that matter at all to anybody?
Well, it makes sense. They're headed to bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they did it as a tribute to Jimmy Snuka, who was a women's rights activist.
I mean, feet will throw some people off, so I'm just curious. Unless
they cross the bear.
Mm-hmm.
Did they cross the line?
The toe line? They towed the line?
Toe the line, baby. No, it was a lamer TNA joke. We cut backstage to a very precocious Goldilocks interviewing Apollo, and she wants to fuck him, right?
Yes.
Yes. Well, who don't?
Me as well.
Who don't? And Bobcat interrupts and says she's demanding respect out of nowhere. Goldilocks suggests that she go take it to management, and I'm fucking praying this isn't Vince Russo. But then the interview gets cut short. What's happening? What is going on here?
I was lost on this.
this is one of the first things they didn't really do a good job. I feel like they've done a good job explaining background on stuff and not just leaping in. This felt like we were supposed to know what was going on, and there's been no discussion of who Bobcat is, who David Young is, and why her and Goldie are not getting along. So, yeah. Goldie is so awkward. She's like, okay, I'm just done with this. We're out. I'm done.
Yeah.
She feels like a real...
very scared.
Yeah, she feels like a real person, like trying to interview these people and actually getting upset with them.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us to Apollo versus David Young. Now, I know how attracted you are to Apollo, Jenny. Do you feel the same way about David Young and his balding head?
No, I do not.
No. Okay.
Hard pass.
Hard pass. JT, what role would David Young have in the WWE?
Probably a cucked jobber, based on his hair.
Cucked.
The Apollo does debut his amazing knockoff of Smooth, which is so great.
I think Young has a real Tommy Cairo vibe for me.
Yeah, kind of trashy.
Is he an ECW guy?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tommy!
The fans are just trying to molest Bobcat the entire time.
Don't get roped into a music gimmick.
Oh, God, I'm just picturing, I'm picturing your wife getting so angry that you woke up the kids with that.
Nah, I wouldn't do it if I thought.
That's what happened in my house, and I might do it just to upset her. So basically, David Young's being destroyed by Apollo, and Bobcat's on the outside, not even paying attention to the match.
She's like flirting with Borash, pretty much.
Yeah. She's basically giving him a lap dance.
Exactly. But in fairness, it's not a very fun match. It's kind of boring action. Reverse chin lock. Tanay calls Bobcat's ringside stuff nonsense, but it's way more interesting than the match.
And Ferrara takes a shot on Borash's body. Says he's a straight line from his ears to his elbows.
Of all the people to be not talking about other people's bodies. Fucking used up Ed Ferrara.
Borash was no part of Bobcat. He's trying to get the fuck off him.
Yeah, what's wrong with him? Bobcat was fine. Nothing wrong with Bobcat. You think maybe she
really?
Do you think maybe she had one of those STDs?
Maybe three.
Right? Well, you have a problem with Bobcat, Jenny?
She's got a butterface. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's not the,
Would you prefer this Bobcat or Bobcat Goldwave?
Definitely Tim's version of Bobcat.
To have sex with?
Sure. That seems like a...
Ah! Oh, it hurts!
She was actually in the WWF. She was one of the Godfather's hosts for a bit. And then she's definitely one I remember them talking up a decent amount of a future potential star. And then she indies and all this stuff. And she's around for a while, actually. Not necessarily. But.
I can barely feel you inside me. That's what he's saying. So anyway, the match is nothing to write home about. Young gets distracted with Bobcat's antics, misses a moonsault, gets super kicked. Apollo hits a TKO for the win. And how do we feel about Bobcat's celebration as though she's won the match?
It was funny to me. She's clueless. She has no idea.
Yeah. No point. She's out there not even aware of what's going on in the ring. Poor David Young. Not only is he getting cucked in the ring, but outside the ring as well.
The real peaches.
I like that Don West talked up Apollo's endurance from the gauntlet last week, putting that over his showing there. He looks good. He's definitely a potential star for them based on his look, his age, energy in the ring. He's definitely got some hype around him.
From Puerto Rico? We transition next to Joel Gertner in the ring.
Well.
He's doing some poems. He lets us know that the Rainbow Express are homosexuals. Was this a surprise to either of you?
Nope.
No. Okay.
I really do like this promo.
Yeah.
I do too.
Well, it's a really progressive speech for the time.
It is.
Really poignant for not only for this era, but also Joel Gertner, who's known to be a wicked macho, chauvinist guy.
Yeah.
And he's out here. He's they're gay, but he isn't. And regardless of the profession, there's a lot of guys who live alternative lifestyles. They live better lives than the fans. They can do what they want in the hotel, but in the ring, they're all business. He brings them out. Tenay says they were too controversial for WCW, which is true. That was the whole standards of practice and stuff when Lodi and Lane pulled off TV, and then they gave him the standards of practices gimmick. And, you know, we get reminded that Bruce is here because Lodi's out. But I thought this was really poignant for Gertner to address the gimmick, his beliefs, why he's with them, and that it doesn't matter if they're gay. So I thought this was really cool stuff for them to be doing.
Was he, though, the right vessel for the gay rights movement in 2002?
Sometimes the superheroes are the ones you don't expect to be superheroes.
I'm going to say, why not do a dude bro, you know, cutting a gay promo?
Yeah.
I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked it, too. I thought it was really cool, and I wasn't expecting it. Like, when he started rhyming, I'm like, oh, what sexual shit's he going to talk about this time? And then it's basically, like, chastising the audience. Anyway, after all that, he's presented the heel as the heel in Alabama, like, which I think is funny. audience immediately mentions Rey audience. The announcers immediately mention Rey Mysterio in relation to what's going on here. And we hear music to come out for the guys to come out to face Lenny and Bruce, but nobody's coming out. And we cut backstage, and it's the Dupps. And they say, I ain't wrestling one of those alternative lifestyle fellas.
Well, and, no, they say left-wing alternative lifestyle fellas.
Yeah, they call them left-wingers. Bo calls them hippies. And they're both just like, he ain't doing it. They're just not going to go out there and fight these gay men, which, whatever, very intolerant. They're the faces in the scenario, let's remember, all right? And so Chris Harris and James Storm are walking backstage, and management stops them and are like, we need you to get in the ring. And they say, oh, well, could we change? And the management goes, no, just take your shirts off and get out there.
Hot.
Why did they have to take their shirts off to get in there?
Because they're wrestlers.
Well, yeah, they're not going to wrestle in dress shirts. But it's Bill Behrens again, who's pretty much a rep of the NWA.
Right.
He's at like 110 miles an hour and everything. Like, he doesn't take a breath. Nope, just get out there. We're going to get him in. We got the magic on.
Take your shirts off. Go fuck those gay men. You get in there, like, with those homosexuals.
Like, everything about wrestling isn't inherently homosexual anyway. And the Dubs just like, nope, we ain't doing that.
Come on now. You've been rolling around for years with men, right? Exactly. Just a dick in the ass.
I'm
just one more
fighting step. Them left wingers.
So hippies. I'm going to fuck my cousin, but I won't step in the ring with the homosexuals.
That explains Alabama so perfectly.
So is this how America's Most Wanted is formed, as a tag team?
Yeah, I think so.
Two guys. A lot of enthusiasm.
Wake up.
Jess, hang on. I don't think you're going to ask Jenny the question. Yes, I believe this is how they come together.
Fuck, man, I thought with all the guys taking off their shirts, you'd be a little more into what we're talking about.
I am.
So we got America.
Anyway, they come to the ring.
They come to the ring. Got America's Most Wanted versus the Rainbow Express. I thought this match had a really cool start. Like, it started with energy. Like, it felt like a really fun tag match. I love how Lenny kisses Bruce's hand to tag in as opposed to the tags. I think it's a really good little detail.
But this is where we really fire up the Don West homophobia stuff, which sucks. Because he's supposed to kind of be the face guy, and Ferrara's supposed to be kind of the douchebag.
Yeah.
And he's like, he hates it. He's like, oh, this is too much. This is gross. And, like, Ferrara's defending them.
Yeah.
Which gave me odd feelings.
Don't push that on us.
Because I find myself standing by Ferrara, which is pissing me off. I like Don West so much, and it angered me so much that he was doing the homophobic stuff on commentary.
Yeah,
I will say, go ahead.
No, well, the same guy who's feeling up women and demanding blowjobs from them in the aisle is, like, defending the homosexuals on this card, you know?
We got him and Gertner, of all people, on the side of homosexual rights.
Well, he is the heel commentator, and they are the heel.
That's true. I guess that's how they're doing it.
Yeah. That's the only reason they're doing it.
I do think – I'm glad Harris and Storm took their shirts off, because I thought they looked great in the jeans and the cut bodies.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought they looked sharp out there, and they could see, you know, them definitely getting the blowjob babyface tag team role here.
I'm definitely surprised Lane and Bruce were able to concentrate long enough to fight them.
Right.
Lenny Lane does a seductive cover.
Oh,
on them.
Love that cover.
And Lane calling his Boston Crab the tiger tamer is like a subtly great little dig, like, which I think is
great. He's basically cosplaying as Jericho, and he has been for like half a decade now, because he started this in like 98, I think, with the Jericho look.
Well, and the tiger tamer like ties it into Siegfried and Roy too, which is really
funny. Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then we get a roll up win. Harris rolls up Lane for the win. What did you guys think about the detail work here by the Rainbow Express?
It was perfect.
Yeah,
I love their chemistry. Like, it's all like perfectly done. The kisses, the hand kisses, just knocked me out. Like, I was like, oh, okay, I'm in love with these guys. They're the best.
No, they're really dedicated to the gimmick, and they have it. Like, they are locked into the hilt already on this thing.
And they go for it. Like, one of them, like, humps the ropes at one point. Like, yeah. He's trying to get the hot tag, and he's just, like, humping. I mean, it looks like a lot of fun what they're doing. And they don't give a shit. They're just going for it.
They would be mega over as faces right now, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I wonder if anybody would roll with them. Like, do you think WWE would roll with a team like this now?
No.
Joey Janela would, though. Yeah. Say one of them.
Joey Janela. Maybe AEW would. Yeah.
I like this, though, and I thought Harris and Storm looked really strong. Like, the debut as a team, they get pushed out to the last minute, they look good, and then they get a solid win. Like, I thought this was a really nice showing for them to get them established. The only disappointing to me part was West in this match. Everything else I liked. I went 3 stars. I thought it was an entertaining tag.
I gave it 3 stars, too.
Yeah, me too. I'm at 3. It's just a good tag team match with fun character work. So yep. I'm good. I'm always down for that. And I love how Ferrara at the end of the match calls out West. Like, why are you so happy they won, dog?
Yeah.
Like, he's really just all over him. So next we're down. We're back with Steamboat out in his gray pants and referee shirt, which drives me insane.
Yes.
And he brings out it. So at first I'm confused as to why he's out there dressed like this. It becomes clear later, but like, he's coming out and interviewing Shamrock dressed as a referee, which is strange. Shamrock comes out wearing flip-flops.
It was taped from the same night, and he probably didn't bring another outfit.
He came to the arena in a referee shirt. Shamrock's doing his Matt Riddle impression in flip-flops, coming out to the ring.
It's an odd choice.
Yeah, and it's Steamboat. Like, I mean, they're trying to build up the whole lineage of the NWA, but it's kind of sad because they basically stopped the lineage at 1989. They talk about Race and Dory Funk and Ric Flair and me, Ricky Steamboat. But then, and then Ken Shamrock, right? And it's a pretty generic promo by both of them. I don't think either of these guys, neither of these guys are very, are the top of their promo game, right?
No, it's pretty basic. And then James Mitchell comes out and calls the crowd crackers.
Crackers! But he also comes out saying, excuse me.
Yes.
Which I believe is the first thing WWE has stolen from TNA. Yeah, what is he going for with the crackers?
I don't know. I guess just redneck joke, but
definitely. Weird.
Is he an albino black man?
Possibly. He is on a mission from his god, he says.
Ooh.
Not your god.
His god.
He dares Ken to face a member of the new church next week. Slash comes out and Shamrock just laughs at him, and then Malice comes in and beats the shit out of him.
Well, imagine Shamrock. He knew him as like JC Ice. Oh, you mean the guy who used to rap Farouk to the ring? I gotta fight him. Yeah, he talks about his disciples and his minions of the new church. And Mitchell talked about how he needs his organization to control the NWA championship. Jenny, why would a church need to control a secondary wrestling title? Like, how do they feel that this title would gain them more followers and bring their message to a greater audience?
Well, you know, like we talked about, the NWA is very historic. And so they feel like there's probably a lot of old people that know about the NWA, and they're the only ones who care about church.
But are they into Satanism?
Some of them are, yes.
Well, before we get answers to this, the Grand Wizard attacks Ken Shamrock from behind. Chokeslams the shit out of him and chokes him on the ground. JT, do you think they missed an opportunity by not calling Malice's finisher the Burning Cross or some sort of derivative of that?
I mean, this is definitely an opportunity on the table, especially in front of this crowd. Probably would have gone over.
Oh, Lord.
Do it to the gays!
I don't think we're talking enough about Shamrock's facial hair.
It's awful.
Yeah, well.
It's really bad. Like, why not just grow a beard?
Do you think if he let
it... chin straps are in at this time. That was, like, the thing. But he doesn't connect it. It just ends at his bottom cheeks.
Do you think if you let it grow, it would just cover his entire face, including his eyes?
Probably.
Definitely hairy, yeah.
Yeah, like,
it just looks like more effort to make that weird shape than to just, like, grow a full beard. Because he's got, like, a shadow on the rest of his face.
It's what's stopping me from making him feel like a big deal here, because it's so stupid.
His facial hair, yeah.
Do you think it's because?
Yeah, that's valid.
Do you think it's because that's what his sister Ryan Shamrock likes, and so he's keeping it on his face?
She likes to hold on to them.
Yeah. But is she riding? Yeah, I guess she'd be riding him. Yeah, I guess that works. So yeah, Malice beats him up. Steamboat at first he doesn't. He just kind of asks Malice to stop choking him. He doesn't step in. He's just kind of on the periphery, like, hey. You mind?
Come on, Malice.
He can't really hear what he's saying. Then he gets more involved. I like Mitchell's catchphrase, which is "Might is right, and the meek shall inherit nothing."
Yeah,
that's all right. And then we kind of end this segment. We're setting up Malice and Shamrock, which I think is the right move based on last week. We talked about it last show too. That like this feels like a really good not necessarily a really good program, but an interesting program going forward. Do you think this is a smart move because they're tying Jarrett up with all the celebrities? And Hall, so we're not tying Shamrock into the other main eventers yet. We're kind of getting him in more of a fighting champion mode.
Yeah, let him build up against these guys that aren't going to – like, it's obvious he's probably going to keep the title against this dude. So I like it because, you know, he can work his way up as champion. You tie up Jarrett, so he's not immediately in the title picture as the owner. You know, so that's okay too. And Malice is a perfect serviceable monster heel contender of the month type guy. So I think it's a – good way they're doing it. Plus, they should do it again where they're not, you know, Malice had worked a long match before that. Like, he kind of deserves another shot in a fresh one-on-one match anyway.
Yeah, and Malice was in the Rumble longer too anyway, right?
Yeah.
So they have that bitch. And now we're kind of like going, we're heading full steam right now until the main event. So basically what they're going to do is a double elimination tournament for the first ever X Division title. But before we get to what that is, Ed Ferrara asks a really interesting question. Why aren't the Flying Elvises included in the tournament considering they won the week before? Is this an injustice?
Well, that wasn't really an – I mean, I guess it was an exhibition match, but that was tag competition, not singles competition, so I don't think it earned them anything.
Why wouldn't the three Elvises just not be in the tournament?
Because you're only going to have four guys, and they felt these were the four that deserved it.
Bullshit.
Maybe they're Elvis racist.
Maybe they are racist. Maybe they don't like Chinese Yang, like Elvis, in there. So the way this double elimination tournament works is it's all four guys. Now, the four guys involved are AJ Styles, Psychosis, Low-Ki, and Jerry Lynn. And they're going to start with Styles and Psychosis. And every time someone gets beat, that person goes to the outside of the ring. Next person jumps in the match. It's all one-on-one matches. And the way it's going to work is as soon as you're beat twice, you are eliminated from this match. What do you guys think of this tournament? The way it's set up, I had never seen anything like this done before. Is this number one? Number one, I actually do think it's unique, but is this a good way to determine the champion? And are you excited about the format?
Yes. I had never seen it either. And I really like the idea, especially when you get to the end and then you have this all of a sudden a guest referee.
Right.
Really, really switching things up.
Yeah. Yeah, because Steamboat is going to jump in for the final fall.
Mm-hmm. For whatever reason. I mean, no reason.
Yeah.
Arbitrary.
Now, JT, do you think that the format they have here is good, or would they have been better served breaking up the round robin tournament throughout the night?
No, I like it here because it's like a real endurance test. I'm kind of glad we didn't get the standard, like, okay, just tournament throughout the night to determine the chance. Like, I liked it that they did it this way where it's fast-paced. Like, that's what this division is supposed to be about, right? It's extreme, it's endurance, it's fast-paced, it's nonstop. So let them go at this breakneck pace and try and outlast the other guys. And I like the format. It's unique. It's different. It makes TNA stand out. It's something different. And even though they ripped off the Rumble, like, the gauntlet idea and the way they did it at the pacing they did it was different. So they're already showing off some cool different gimmick matches that you don't see a ton of. And I'm wondering why this has never really been done again. Like, we see it, something close to it, that Cruiserweight Open at WrestleMania 20, rather.
Yeah.
Where it's similar to this, but not really, because with the double elimination thing. It's just a really neat, different concept. And I enjoyed it with these four guys.
It also does a really good job of protecting them after losses, for losses.
Yeah.
Because you can take a couple of pins here after getting your shit kicked out of you by somebody else, and it doesn't hurt you. Mind you, I'm not one who thinks that losses really hurt that much. Like, I think things can be rebuilt. But I think it's a nice out. So we start off with Styles and Psychosis. They go back and forth. I'm not going to get too much into the action. I wanted to get more into the falls. Styles wins the Styles Clash. Loki comes in. Loki hits a sick dragon, like a weird dragon sleeper off the top. It actually made me pop out of my chair.
And his chops were sick too.
Everything about this guy, like, are Loki and Jeff Jarrett even, or you know, anybody on that level, even performing the same art form, really? Like, it doesn't feel like
it doesn't feel like it here, yeah.
It doesn't feel like a different style. It feels like a different thing completely. Like, maybe because Loki is actually chopping the shit out of people. AJ rolls through the German into the face buster and finishes Loki. So AJ's now won two in a row. Loki's lost one. Psychosis lost one. Jerry Lynn comes in and just fucking package and just pile drives Styles and pins him, which I love because Styles is exhausted from the two previous matches. Psychosis comes in and faces Lynn. Now, do any of these guys feel like, does Psychosis feel as in place as the other three in this match for you guys?
Yeah, I think if anybody is an outlier, it'd be Lynn, right?
You think Lynn is the outsider in this match?
I just feel like because he's older and bigger, he just legit looks different, but he kicked ass in this match.
Right.
I thought Psychosis fits in because we know he's like really good from WCW.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't think he feels like he's shoehorned in here. It sucked to see him get whacked so quickly, but I thought he looked great in week one. So
yeah.
If anything, he might have looked the best of all these guys in week one. I thought he fit fine. Like, I think he's a good addition if he sticks around to the X Division because he's an established name that we know can work and he looks really good.
Right. I think it's interesting, too, that you have, like, a bunch of different styles. Like, Psychosis being the kind of lucha representative. You have AJ kind of doing the new age – not new age, but, like, newer stuff. Loki is more of a martial arts guy. And Lynn feels, like, very much like the anchor to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think they really have a nice mesh. Lynn pile drives Psychosis and eliminates him. So now Psychosis is gone. Loki comes in against Lynn, and Loki has a bunch of nice reverses for the pile driver. One especially into an arm bar. There's a great power bomb for a near fall. But Loki again gets pile driven and eliminated. So now Jerry Lynn is not lost. Loki's out. Psychosis is out. Mm-hmm. And AJ Styles comes in with a defeat. So Lynn just has to beat Styles once to win, or Styles has to beat Lynn twice. Now here,
what I like to this point too, though, is that the Cradle Piledriver is already now established as a lethal finisher. Like,
yes.
He's hit three guys on it, three really good guys on it,
yeah,
in one match, basically. You finish off three guys. So we already now have an established, protected finisher that comes off as, like, completely devastating. I also love in here that Wes is plugging the pay-per-view price like he's on QVC. Just $9.99 for this action, you know.
Yeah.
Or $9.95, whatever it was, but...
Yeah. Now here, the problem I have is I think they spoil the ending when Steamboat doesn't go in as soon as AJ Styles enters the ring.
I wondered about that as well. Where's Steamboat?
You're right. Yeah, he should have went in. I guess they could have said he wasn't going to go in until we knew it was an absolute decisive victory. But
yeah,
he should have went in at this point. You're right.
Yeah. So Styles hits the Styles Clash to pin Lynn, and now we're down to next fall wins. I got the impression, and tell me what you think about this, JT. Do you think I think Jerry Lynn is great, but do you think he's the one in this match the longest to kind of guide everybody through the match, as he's the one who has the most experience?
Well, I also think, to Jenny's point, like how she keeps mentioning, he's older, he's bigger. So not only to guide the match, but I think he's being presented as like the elder statesman veteran guy to beat. Like, these other guys are all kind of up and comers. Not maybe Psychosis as much, but
right.
Loki and AJ Styles are really pretty fresh faces. So I think, you know, setting it up that Lynn is the more, you know, experienced veteran who's more likely to dominate something or have more familiarity with these types of matches. So I think that's the position they're putting him in, as he's kind of the guy to beat right now.
Yeah.
And he can still really go, and he still makes AJ look really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the WWE missed an opportunity with Lynn, because they had him for a while, and they had him as light heavyweight champion, but I guess they just didn't like his personality, I would imagine.
Yeah, like, but they didn't let him be like the dominant heel douche. Like, I think he did it at the very end. He cut like an angry promo from WWF New York or something, but for most of the time, he was just like a bland babyface. Like, they didn't let him maybe do like a bitter asshole gimmick. He probably would have been pretty good at it.
I think this didn't
have room, honestly. Yeah. I know it sounds shitty to say, but... And when he was there, the roster was so jammed and it was right around WrestleMania 17. Like, there's just so much going on. Mm-hmm. They didn't seem to have a ton of room for Jerry Lynn having light heavyweight title defenses on TV. You know, I think he was working a lot of, like, jacked metal type stuff and heat. So I think it was just like a roster bloat issue for when they had him.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also think that promo you're talking about kind of sealed his fate, because he lets out this cry at the end of it, like a "Row!" Like, which it's a very, like, Howard Dean presidential run scream.
Oh, boy.
That really, I think, tanked him. So we start off – we got these two left, and these guys have a cool match. I hate that Steamboat – they're both – at the start of the match, like, they're both lying on the – the start of the fall, they're both lying on the match, and Steamboat's doing a 10 count for them. But they've gone on and on about how there has to be a winner. Mm. Like, don't count guys out. Let them get up and fight. I love the rest of the match with these two. Tanay, this is why I don't like Tanay. He's got that stupid catchphrase. These two are in a game of can you top this? I hate that catchphrase. I think it's no one plays a game of can you top this. Is can you top this a worse catchphrase than the big dog?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it a worse catchphrase than oh my?
Is it a worse catchphrase than slap nuts for you?
Oh, yeah. No. Slap nuts is worse. Is it worse than no screaming numbers game whenever there's more than one person on the screen? Anyway, they have a great little sequence. AJ Styles wins with what looked like a Phoenix splash, but he called it the spiral tap. Mm-hmm. So AJ Styles is your first X Division champion. His music is terrible. Is he the right choice to carry the X Division starting off?
That's a tough one, though. I really loved this match. I loved AJ in it. They do a lot of this really great near-fall overindulgent bullshit that I tend to enjoy quite a bit. But, yeah, like, I thought he had a really – like, he got out the other two guys, and then he eventually gets Lynn out. So why not start off with AJ? I thought he looked really good.
So I'm kind of torn because – like, we had Shamrock win the world title. So you could have done the heel. Lynn's not really heel, but you could have went the opposite way here and have the guy get chased.
Yeah.
But I don't blame them for wanting to get AJ over. Like, I fully understand why they do it and trying to make him look, like, awesome out of the gate and not taking a loss really here. And he does get pinned, so Lynn has a claim. Mm-hmm. I think I would have had AJ win the first, you know, comeback and then barely lose at the end and have Lynn be the top level boss of the X Division for a bit. But we'll see where it goes. I don't blame them at all. I think it's a win-win, honestly, either way. But AJ looked awesome hanging in and beating Lynn twice. And it was a nonstop match. All four guys showed up. It was excellent. I went 4 stars, and it really proves that the X Division will be, you know, the best spot in TNA. And I like, too, and we'll see if it continues, but I like that they gave this the main event slot because they knew it was going to rock. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to present the X Division title as equally big as the world title, just in its own little world. So I like that it wasn't put in the middle and forced Shamrock and Malice into the end. So I like that they go this route.
I don't believe I've ever seen a cradle pile driver before. Not that I can recall, but now it's my favorite move because that shit kicked ass every time he hit him.
Get ready for it in ECW when you get to Jerry Lynn.
Good. I need all of that all the time.
Yeah, I thought this match was great, too. I went 4 also. To me, this is what TNA needed to be.
Yes.
Like, we're talking...
Here's the alternative, yep.
Yeah, we're talking earlier about, like, why I didn't like Cheeks and why, you know, why not Jarrett and Hall. Like, it's because that stuff's played out and it's on the other channel. This isn't on the other channel. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Cruiserweight. I don't want to sound hyperbolic with the way they describe the X Division, but this felt very different. And it was exciting. And if TNA was only this, man, I'd be tuned in every single week.
Right.
Yep. And we'll see how much they use it, you know, how much they show it off.
Yeah. Jenny, what'd you go on the match?
I went 4.25.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really it was really solid and fun. My only thing is that, like, I would say that Styles is probably the less developed character of the three.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Psychosis to me, like, I don't think he was out of place, but I don't think he was – I don't think they're based in the division around him to begin with. Like, it's clearly the other three on top, but Styles has room to grow, which is nice. I you can make an argument for any of the three of them, I think, at that point.
None of them really have, like, stories yet, really. You know, we haven't heard them talk or really do anything except fucking wrestle. So I mean, that's fine.
But you know what? I'm okay with them not talking.
I'm kind of okay with it too.
Like, because again, like the idea of it being like a sports-based competition for the X Division to me is actually way more interesting than like if suddenly like, I don't know, they're attacking celebrities or like yelling about being screwed over. Or
right.
Complaining.
I mean,
about...
you kind of want a story too, but yeah. I feel you. Just wrestle the match, you know, without anything else.
Yeah, and I'm okay. I'm okay with the matches coming out of the storylines coming out of the matches.
Right.
Like, I'm okay with Jerry Lynn, I don't know if this is what happens, but coming back next week or something and being like, look, like, I beat you, so I deserve a rematch. Like, that's how I like my wrestling angles, building from within the physicality of it.
Mm-hmm.
We can agree, though, that AJ Styles' music is horrible.
It's real bad.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
They don't want none. They don't
want none. Oh, God. I don't even think his music now is that good. I know people
love his music.
Come on.
Nah, I don't want none.
It gets me hyped.
Ooh. Next week, TNA, because we're going off the air with Styles as champ, they announced that there's a one-night tournament for the NWA TNA tag team titles. Mike, number one, are you excited about this tournament? Number two, should there even be a tag division at this point, considering who the teams are?
Yeah, I think you got to get everything established. I mean, if you're having tag teams, you should have titles. And I like that we're going weekly with these belts instead of jamming them all into one night because you'll end up play out. So we did the world title. Now we do the X division. And next week we will have the tag. And then our champions will all be set. So I think it's a good way to slow roll getting all the champions in place. So we don't know. We'll see what other teams show up in this thing if they have any other ones.
Right. Jenny, do you want the... Which team, what do you hope is the final, and why is it the Johnsons versus the Rainbow Express?
Rainbow Express, that's my answer, and you know why, because it's the perfect visual.
Right.
We need that to happen.
Yeah, we need the Rainbow Express just tossing those Johnsons around the ring.
We need all those jokes, you know, just all of that.
Yeah, Ed Ferrara is going to have a fucking brain aneurysm.
Me too.
Those guys in the ring. JT, who appeared this week?
All right, so let's pull that up on our appearance tracker. So we had 68 people last week.
Oh, my
this
gosh.
Week, we only had four new appearances. We had Cheeks, Frank Parker, Brown Eyed Girl, and David Young. So we have 72 people have appeared across 2 weeks.
Wow, that's not bad. I will say that this week's show felt a little bit different than the first week's show. In terms of this, it wasn't as much Crash TV as the week before.
Mm-hmm.
So how
right.
much?
No, they definitely slowed down a bit. Plus, we didn't have the gauntlet with a million guys in it, which also kind of helped. We're like kind of settling into the actual roster now.
Yeah.
Like, as I assumed, I'm guessing a lot of those people in the gauntlet aren't. Like, I'd be shocked if we see Conan, Vampire Warrior, Carino. Like, I think all those guys are probably just Lash LaRue. Smiley. I wonder if those guys are pretty much just like one. We'll see, but we're just in there for the gauntlet.
Do you remember when they were in WWE, though?
Of course. All of them.
So here's all the stuff that happened this week.
Oh, so, my gosh.
We started with a format change. Country music manager, heel interference in the first match, face interference in the first match, Ryan Shamrock paying off an announcer, NASCAR people seconding someone to the ring, a lingerie event, a hinted aisle blowjob, an announcer being beaten with a belt, backstage interview hijack, a lap dance at ringside, girls dancing in cages, Joel Gertner pleading for tolerance, Don West preaching intolerance, a team refusing to fight homosexuals, a new tag team being formed, a sneak attack on a new champion, and a new champion being named in the X Division. Did
18 I miss? Again. It was 18 again.
Wow.
18.
Right. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it is the same. JT, what's your best segment?
I went with the Malice attacking Shamrock to set up their match. I thought it was pretty good.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, you guys didn't rate it, and I did, so I'm going to consider it a segment, the lingerie battle royal.
I'm going to go with Steamrock interviewing Shamrock simply for the fact that I like that it sets up his first challenger, and I like the cohesion that it brings. Worst segment, Jenny.
I'm actually going to go with the Steamboat and Shamrock interview for this podcast.
Were you just picking what I pick?
Like, no, but both of them are pretty bland. Like we said, they're not super great. on the mic, so.
Jen A.
It wasn't horrible, but not the best.
You're disappointing me, Jen A.
Sorry.
Disappointing me. Don't get the AIDS, Jen A. mine was Ferrara thinking he's going to get blown on pay-per-view. He's putting his hands in the air. I didn't like it. JT, what's your worst segment?
I want the Dupps being homophobes in the back.
That was pretty bad.
Look, they said they didn't have a problem. They're just not wrestling. They're not wrestling those hippies. I ain't wrestling those hippies. Wild card. Wild card. Somebody talk. Wild card. I'm mixing
cradle right. Pile driver.
What about it?
I love it. It's crazy and wild, and I love it.
Do you find that, like, psychosis made it look like his neck was being broken every time
he yes, did? Yes, he did.
Oh, he was.
Yeah. And we never saw him on planet Earth again.
For mine, I went with Wow, Really? Was the title of my category. Gertner and TNA handling the Rainbow Express pretty well. As outing them, so I was shocked, actually.
Mine was This Is the Feud, and it's Jeff Jarrett versus the old man.
Jackie Fargo.
I can't anymore. Okay, copycats. Cheeks Rikishi.
I just want the TNA Battle Royal, which is lifted right out of like 99.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also think Bobcat is the low rent Terry Reynolds.
Yeah, yeah.
Ed Ferrara.
No, yeah, but she wasn't as aloof, Terry. I don't know.
No, that's true. Ed Ferrara, Mickey Rourke in Iron Man 2 is what I have, to, I guess, or Randy the Ram, depending on what you want. Who do you want to see more of, Jenny?
I want to see more of AJ.
Ooh. JT, who do you want to see more of?
My man Apollo.
Well, yes.
So when I was a kid, I was somehow under the impression that Tito Santana was the singer of those songs.
Arriba, arriba, arriba.
It's like, I don't know if you had a time when you were a kid where you didn't realize different people had the same last name. Like that, and that's what mine was. I want to see more Ken Shamrock as a badass champion, and I want to see him push the forefront of the company. JT, who do you want to see less of?
Ed Ferrara getting whipped with a belt, and Don West, the homophobe.
Didn't it feel good, though, to watch him getting whipped with the belt?
It was a little too sexual.
Yeah, it was great. What are you talking about? I would like to see a little bit less of Goldilocks. I feel like she's pretty pointless.
Pointless and useless. I don't want to see Cheeks. I'm good. I'm good.
Lame.
I'm good if he could tap out to the diabetes. I'm good. Like, he'd be fine. 2002, JT would love
Ken Shamrock's chin strap hair, probably. But I would wonder why he's wearing sandals to the ring when he's the world champion. But
Jenny, what would 2002 Jen 8 love?
Oh god, I don't even remember her, but probably the chicks in lingerie.
I'm with you. 2002 me would be all over that.
Mm-hmm.
All over that. Worth your money? Would it be worth the $10, Jenny?
Yeah, for sure.
JT, worth $10?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, me too. Final grade for me is 7.
Same here.
I went with a 6.5.
It's too long. You're doing halves already?
Yeah, I like it slightly better than the first one.
It's like it's got that great match, but the rest of it kind of falls flat, right?
Right, so I think the first one may have been more entertaining from top to bottom, but to me that match was so great that it carries this one.
Yeah, that's it.
Fair.
I only counted 3 WWE mentions in the whole thing for 100 minutes, which comes out to once every 33 minutes. So we're at 15 mentions total. So far in their lifetime, TNA has mentioned the WWF once every 13 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, let's power rank these guys, and we are out of here.
All right, I will ask you in order if we want to keep or move. AJ Styles, is he still our number one?
Yeah.
Yeah, he stays okay. Number one.
Is Low-Key still our number two?
No.
Okay. I'm going to go Lynn number two.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a big jump for him because he was our number seven before.
But I'd probably have Low-Key number three.
Oh, we had Kate Crush number three before.
I'd probably put – I mean, the three guys in the match I think need to go.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right, so Loki there. Do we want to shift K Crush to four? Do we had a we had so the rest of the list we had K Crush, Apollo, Scott Hall, Shamrock, Tio, Jimmy Young, and Malice.
Well, is this is
Jimmy Young.
This is cumulative, right? It's not just based on this show.
Correct. Yeah, it's ongoing. Question. Yep. Okay. So just because someone wasn't on doesn't mean they should drop, but they can get bumped because.
But what I'm thinking is like it depends how much we weigh this match because Psychosis was in that match.
I wanted Psychosis last time, so I think he should sneak in somewhere.
Okay, yeah. Let's add him in.
Yeah, well, look, Malice, let's take Malice off. Let's take Tio off. Tio's not there again.
Yeah.
And take Jimmy Yang off. He's not in there.
Okay.
Or at the very least, he's at the bottom.
So we have Styles, Lynn, Lowkey is our top three. Yeah. Apollo 4, were you good there?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he didn't really do anything this week. And he's not really – I think Hall should probably pass Apollo.
And how about K-Crush?
I'd put him ahead of Apollo, too. And maybe K-Crush.
Nah.
Well, he's just doing more on the show, right?
No, he was good. Would you put Crush above a Hall?
Yeah, I think so.
Would you put Shamrock above Apollo?
No. Because Apollo at least is wrestling. Okay. And Shamrock's
Shamrock's not wrestling?
No, not on this show. Like, he's going to move back up. But, like, now, he wasn't in his strong suit in this show, right?
Okay.
Yeah, we have to put Rainbow Express somewhere as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we're at six right now with Styles, Lynn, Lowkey, Crush, Hall, Apollo.
We'll put Shamrock after Apollo.
Okay. So you want him above the Rainbow Express?
No, I think the Rainbow Express should maybe go ahead of, like, maybe – sorry, Jenny. I think this should go ahead of Apollo.
How about Hall?
I don't know. Hall seems to have a bit more of a body. What do you think, Jenny? Should the Rainbow Express go below Apollo?
Probably slotted right below, yeah.
I'd put them above. I think as a whole, they a little bit more going on. And I love All Apollo.
Right. Yeah, they're trending up, though. Like, I think I don't think they have enough to go ahead of Hall yet. But maybe. Shamrock after Apollo? Or...
Yep.
Yeah.
So that'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then how about Psychosis, and then how about Storm and Harris?
Are we separating them or keeping them?
No, as a team. Put them in. I thought they were great as a team in this show.
All right, I'm good with that.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, no one else really jumps out at me. Like, if we're dropping Malice, he'd be the only other one.
Francine?
Well, I don't know. You want to debate Francine versus...
No, I think America's Most Wanted is probably better. I just don't know if they should go ahead or below Psychosis. Psychosis was in a better match, so...
And he had the good match the week before, too.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so number one, AJ Styles, Jerry Lynn, Lowkey, K-Crush, Scott Hall, Rainbow Express, Apollo, Shamrock, Psychosis, Harris, and Storm. Out are Tao, Jimmy Young, and Malice.
Yeah, fuck them.
Okay. All right, so we'll see where we go next week.
Yeah, all right. Well, guys, this was a lot of fun. You guys brought it, as always. I just want to bring everybody's attention back to the North South Connection podcast network. We got a lot of fun stuff going on. If you can give us a follow, that'd be great. Leave us a review. It helps us gain more followers. Check out our other shows, including Extreme Three-Way Dance, JT, Jenny, and John breaking down ECW. You get a lot of the bleed over here with how much Jenny hates Shane Douglas. Imagine how much more she hates it on the show. Chad Campbell's Fighting Spirit of 06, where he's going through 06, which is a really interesting year. Carolina Dreaming, he's also bringing it for the Place to Be Nation greatest WCW match of all time. Check out that, and also check out Place to Be Nation for the greatest WCW match of all time, which is our stretch project for the year. A lot of fun stuff being discovered there. Jacob Williams is bringing it with Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, Jeff Learns Wrestling, JT and I's No Holds Barred, Wrestling Warzone with JT and Chad. Again, Reg and I's Much Ultimate Memphis. Check out the year that was. We're going through all the years of WWF. Pay per views, pod blasts. Subscribe, let us know what you think. Let us know what we need to improve on. Please be in touch with us. JT, you are at JT the Pod Guy on Twitter, correct?
Follow there. We got lots of tournament action going on each and every day, usually. Might take a week off here and there, but we have cool matchups every day in different tournaments, so check them out.
Jenny position at the Jenny position on Twitter.
Correct. I don't just hate things. Like a lot of people, I love some things like Mikey Whipwreck. So
I will definitely,
yeah. So you can hear my Mikey takes on Twitter at Judy Position. I have a Facebook page. It will feature all of my shows on my feed. Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, everything I do over there. Also, you can find me on the Placement Nation Wrestling feed with Jenny the Gems, PTB NXT, and Talking WCW. And that's it.
So you like Mikey Whipwreck?
Yes.
But you definitely but you definitely have a problem with New Jack.
No, of course I don't. What do you mean?
I don't know. I was just checking. At Aaron D. George on Twitter. Hit me up. Yell at me. Do whatever you want. JT, love you. Jenny, love you. Everybody.
It's like the special...